behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benson.
And I'm Ben Boland by day.
Oh, really? What do you do by night?
Well, let's just say I've got another second job, Scott. You could probably call it a calling, maybe a hobby.
Are you a super villain or something?
All I can say is I'm cleaning up this town.
A masked avenger?
I'm a masked avenger on an adventure. But this isn't about me, Scott. Today we are talking about a golden oldie of superhero vehicles that might be recognizable to some folks.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll tell you, I'll be honest. I know the car. I don't necessarily know the television show, the radio program, any of that stuff. I'm not familiar with I didn't watch it, I guess. That's what I want to say.
Right. What we are talking about today is the Green Hornet, and even more specifically, we're talking about his car.
Yeah, Black Beauty. Now, I do know something about Black Beauty, and we're going to talk about that, but maybe we do need to mention the Green Hornet TV series, just to begin with, right?
Yeah.
Now, okay, this is kind of interesting. I think a lot of people probably did watch this. I mean, I don't know if it was wildly popular. It really only ran for one full season, from 1966 to 1967. There were 26 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It aired on ABC, and it starred a guy named Van Williams as the Green Hornet, who was, his character's name was Britt Reed. And, Bruce Lee starred as Kato. So, you know, Bruce Lee, the martial artist, you know, the martial arts, instructor.
Yep.
As Kato, his sidekick. And, what a fascinating combination this was on screen because, you know, he used his martial arts in the program as well. It was a neat program. I guess it kind of came on the heels of the Batman series.
Yeah, I think that's a good point because if you are someone who looks at a lot of the cycles of pop culture, you see that superhero crazes, quote unquote, kind of cycle through, and this was part of one of those cycles.
Yeah, and Batman was wildly popular. It was really, and this is kind of strange too. The original Batman series that ran also on ABC, was from 1966 to 1968, so it was only 2 years really, or 3 years I think. 120 episodes is what this thing went. They were doing two episodes per week, in the 1966 and 67, season, which is when, you know, the Green Hornet was also on. So you could watch Batman and the Green Hornet all in the same week. You know, maybe even a couple of times Batman and then also a Green Hornet episode.
Oh yeah, and in the last two episodes of the Green Hornet television show, the Green Hornet and Batman actually team up.
Hmm. Really?
Yep.
So there's a crossover.
I think it was maybe kind of a Hail Mary to the ratings.
I guess so. I mean, I sometimes like those crossover things. I sometimes don't. It kind of depends on the way they go. But
it all depends on how they're done. And we also know that there was a radio show that predated the Green Hornet.
Yeah.
There was also a comic book series that predated the TV show.
Yeah.
And in all three incarnations of this, including the newer Green Hornet film starring Seth Rogen, Black Beauty has been a constant presence.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I do want to talk about that. Can I just mention one more thing about the Green Hornet himself? Because I think if we get some backstory on this thing, we'll kind of understand why he would need a car, why Britt Reed would need a car like this.
Yeah, now he's a journalist, right?
He is. Well, sort of. He's sort of a journalist. He kind of... Well, let me just tell you this, Ben. We'll start it this way.
Okay.
All right. James Reed, who's Britt's father, was killed. He was a newspaper magnate, newspaper mogul, I should say, who was killed, and he left his son, Britt Reed, in charge of his entire media empire.
Okay.
So his son is kind of a screw up. You know, he's like this millionaire playboy. I don't know.
Devil May Care type
I
dude.
Guess. Yeah, he's out partying all night and just kind of living it up, really doing nothing.
He's a little bit of a degenerate.
Yeah, a little bit. And, you know, his father, you know, he's on him about doing nothing and that type of thing. But eventually this guy is killed and he finds out about it, of course, you know, through media or whatever, you know, he's out partying or something and, finds out that his father's been killed and now he's in charge of this media empire, the entire future of this company.
Mm-hmm.
And he begins to kind of take things a little bit more seriously. Instead of being such a screw up, you know, and just being out there just to party, he decides that he needs to do something with his life. He needs to, you know, kind of take his father's advice now that he's gone and kind of clean up the city, I guess, because his dad was really big on you know, like trying to prevent some of the corruption that was going on in the big city that they lived in. Mm-hmm. And he decides that, you know, he's going to actually do something to rid the city of corruption. So he turns to a guy named Cato, who was his dad's former assistant. And Cato, as we mentioned, who's played by Bruce Lee,
yeah,
which is
a TV series.
Fascinating, by the way. Mm-hmm. A lot of promotional photos with Bruce Lee with, you know, he's like in that one leg up kick stance,
yeah,
you know, a lot of
yeah.
those go on. But he teams up with his dad's former assistant, and the two of them pose as villains to kind of get close to these bad guys, but in reality, they're the good guys. What they do is they kind of trick these guys into, it's like a sting operation almost.
Yeah, it's like something in The Wire.
Yeah, they get on the inside, and then they kind of leave the evidence with these guys, and then they alert the police, and the police find them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess the way they say it is that on paper, the Green Hornet and Cato are villains, but in reality, they're the good guys that are kind of setting up all these bad guys.
Right. And also, you know, it's an historic event in the 1960s in the TV show for Cato to be played by a non-white actor.
Sure.
Which
that was,
is a
big
milestone.
Deal. Yeah. Yeah.
And then also, now the original idea of Green Hornet and Cato, I think, dates back to 1936, and the radio show was pretty popular in the 30s. However, Cato at that time, despite being ostensibly Japanese, was voiced by a white actor.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And, you know, that happened all the time in the early days.
Yeah, that's just the way it was at that time. Now, you know what? Can I just mention one little quick sidebar here?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's something I got on a tiny little piece of paper, so I'm straining to read it. But
yeah,
you know,
it's
what,
a tiny
what it,
post-it.
Well,
yeah.
what it did was every time I read the word Cato, and tell me what you think of when I say Cato.
Oh, Cato Kaelin.
Oh, that's wrong. That's not wrong. That's what you think of. You think of Cato Kaelin with the O.J. Simpson trial and all that, right?
Oh, okay. Do you think? I think I'm in your head.
I'm thinking of, you remember Inspector Clouseau with Cato, his sidekick?
Yeah.
Now, Cato was another martial arts trained individual who he hired to kind of hone his martial arts skills. And he would say, you know, like, whenever I come home, I want you to attack me, you know, so anytime. So
yeah.
He was just like constantly on the lookout. He'd walk in the door instantly he would jump on him, or, you know, he would have to kind of sneak around looking for Cato, you know, before he attacked him. So it was always kind of a funny gag, I guess, in these mm-hmm. old Peter Sellers movies, you know, the Inspector Clouseau, Pink
yeah.
Panther. That's what I think of when I think of Cato.
Well, maybe we can put all three of these Catos together.
Maybe. You know what? We're getting off topic
here. We are.
But we did need to talk about who Britt Reed was, or is rather, and Cato.
Right.
Because that kind of lets you know that they need a vehicle that is somehow matched to what they do. They need something that, you know, is like a superhero or supervillain car, right?
Right. And that's why every time that they're out and about to be some vigilantes or pull the wool over the eyes of criminals across town, Britt Reed and Cato run to his garage, flip a switch, and then these clamps come up and grab the axles of his regular Joe Schmo Britt Reed car, and the whole thing flips, revealing Black Beauty, which we are going to come to find has several iterations in the real world, right?
Yeah, that's right. There's several different versions of this thing. Now, the original Black Beauty, though, that's kind of the one I want to focus on, but we will talk
from
a little
TV
bit about
the TV series?
Yeah, from the TV series.
Okay.
It's kind of the one I want to talk about. Now, the original car was a 1966 Imperial Crown Sedan.
Mm-hmm.
So a Chrysler vehicle, great big Chrysler vehicle.
Yeah, it's a land yacht.
It's sure. a huge car. It's a 19-foot car. There were two of these that were made for the original show, and both of those cars exist today. They're both still around,
mm-hmm.
Which differs greatly from the movie that we'll talk about.
Right.
And in 1966, a guy named Dean Jeffries,
mm-hmm.
who was a customizer, you know, Hollywood customizer, he was charged with making you know, these two different cars for this this television series, and he found these two different 66 Imperial Crown sedans, these four-door sedans, and he built them for a price of about $50,000 in 1966 each. And I've done the conversion. That is $361,000 in 2013 dollars, Ben.
Yeah, and that wasn't all profit for Mr. Jeffries, because there was a lot of work to be done here. The car's paint job had 30 coats, Scott, 30 coats of metal black, metal flake, pure black, green pearl of essence lacquer hand rub.
30 coats.
Yeah.
30 coats. You're blowing me away. I had no idea that that had that many coats.
Yeah, it had to, it had to look impressive. Also, he didn't have much time to complete the job.
How long?
He had like, I think he had like a month.
Just a month to create Black Beauty. Cause that's pretty remarkable when we talk about, you know, some of these Hollywood type gadgets that he installs in this thing.
Yeah, it's buried in my notes here.
Oh, that's okay.
So we'll get to it. But, I do want to point out, if I can, before we get to the gadgets, just a sidebar about Mr. Jeffries himself.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Okay. So, Dean Jeffries, is a renowned stuntman, fabricator, and car customizer. This is by no means the only car he worked on. He worked with race car drivers like Troy Ruttman. He worked with James Dean. Jeffries is actually the one who painted Little Bastard on that Porsche 550.
No kidding.
Yep. He also had worked with Jim Rathman, Parnelli Jones, A.J. Foyt. He even worked with Carroll Shelby in 1962.
Man, so I'm hearing a lot of names that we've mentioned many times here on Car Stuff. So, so we'll have to remember Dean Jeffries as more than just a car customizer, right?
Right. Yeah. He was a talented guy and he worked with a lot of big names. So he's just the person to turn this around because, as you said, Scott, there's a lot of work. There's a lot of gadgets.
There are so many gadgets, Ben. I mean, I tried to look up a list of Black Beauty's gadgets, you know, what this thing actually had, because I've seen the true car, the original car,
okay,
in person.
The Imperial.
And the Imperial. And it had so many different gadgets and buttons and switches and everything. And a lot of it I know is dummy stuff, you know.
Sure.
But a lot of them also truly function. You flip a switch and something does pop out of the hood. Now, you know, if it's a machine gun, it doesn't fire the machine gun, obviously, in real life. But it does hydraulically operate a machine gun that does emerge from the hood of the car.
Now, I can help you out with some of these gadgets.
Oh, sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So we'll start with the machine guns. Those are 30 caliber M1919 Browning machine guns.
Very cool. It also had what they called infra-green headlights. Now, that's kind of a gag thing, that they just put green glass over the front of the headlights. And supposedly, now, the idea behind these was that they're very dim to anybody who looked at them. You know, they could prowl around town with these green headlights on the front of this black car, right?
Yeah.
And no one could see it. But supposedly, with Kato's green visors that he could put down as the driver of Black Beauty, he could see just as if, you know, like they were regular headlights.
Right. And then they also had, that's right, it's a polarized filter, right?
Yeah.
And they also had some FIM-92 Stinger missiles on the front bumper.
Yeah, that's really cool, isn't it?
Because, of course, you can launch those easily from a moving.
Oh, sure. At any city, you can do that, right?
Sure.
That's something just everybody does that. And they had something called the scanner, which is an audio-visual surveillance device, which also could fly anywhere they needed it to. So that was kind of a wildly futuristic advanced thing that they had decided to include. I mean, it's really just this kind of funny-looking antenna that pops out of the back trunk that supposedly is an audio-video surveillance.
Uh-huh.
Now, we mentioned the garage turntable for the thing. That's kind of cool, too, where the floor flips over.
Yeah.
One other thing, Ben, they had a phone in the glove box, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it was called the Hornet phone. I mean,
yeah,
think about the Bat phone, right? The Hornet
uh-huh.
phone. And it was pretty advanced for 1966, although it was rotary and it had a corded handset.
So yeah, but it was in the car.
It is in the car, and that's incredibly advanced for 1966. So, you know, a car phone, that's amazing. Retractable panels, you know, that we mentioned for the rockets, both front and rear.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There are four more Stinger missiles in the rear bumper.
Yeah, and it could be told to run in silent mode, which was kind of an on-command type thing, where the car would become completely silent. You know, normally it was like a whirring or buzzing sound that it made when it was driving around town. All they had to do was say go into silent mode, and the car would become real stealth-like. You know?
Kind of buzzing like a hornet.
Yeah. This thing was just completely silent at that point. They also had a gas gun, which would supply non-lethal hornet gas. That sounds a lot like some of the Bat inventions, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
It's very, very much like that. They also had a mortar which was built into the scanner launcher area, which would fire mortar shells. So a lot of weapons on this car.
Yeah, trunk-mounted machine guns, also 30 caliber, retractable anti-riot spikes on the front wheels.
Yeah, yeah, those are cool. Ben-Hur style, right?
Ben-Hur style, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, those are cool. It had a front screen, which they called it the front screen, which is really like a small TV screen.
Yeah.
Which is, again, pretty advanced for 66, which was capable of remote television, and it also served as a radar screen for the Green Hornet and Kato when they drove around. They had
shotguns.
Oh yeah, shotguns. Of course, they carried their own weapons. They had a front dash speaker, which the Green Hornet's gold watch would. The audio transmissions that he would send from his gold watch would be received in the car. You know, Kato could receive them in the car, which is pretty advanced, I guess. And also that front speaker could monitor the Air Force frequency, so they could monitor what the Air Force was doing.
Well, of course,
very, very important for supervillains. Supervillains or superheroes? I'm not quite sure what to call them. They had a rear screen, which is similar, a rear speaker. They had an oscilloscope, which could pick up vibrations or frequencies. Also served as like a jamming signal, electronic bug detector device. I mean, it was just, they had a smoke screen. Black Beauty was bulletproof, as you would imagine. It was,
right.
It was laser proof.
Of course it was laser proof.
Of course it was laser proof. I mean, this thing had everything, Ben. It was such a cool car. And for Jeffries to put it together in, what do you say, about a month. That's incredible. Two cars. That's quite a build list, really.
Yeah. Let me add on to this, too. The 66 Imperial Crowns, the sedans that we're talking about here, they are they could be considered the second iteration of the Black Beauty because in the comic series that came out, there were two versions of Black Beauty. The first was kind of loosely based on a Pontiac Banshee, and the second was based on the Oldsmobile Touring Sedan.
Hmm, okay.
Oh, wait, now, excuse me, these are the Now comics. Oh, I think the TV series may predate those.
Oh, okay.
But just as far as we go with comic book canon, which I know is important to people, the superhero canon, I'm going to say that the Imperial Crown is the official Black Beauty because it was used in the television show. And it was used in the film.
And you know what, Ben? I got just a little bit I want to mention about the car itself. I mean,
right.
If you want to just go back to the base car, not Black Beauty so much, but the 1966 Chrysler Imperial Crown vehicles. It's kind of a fascinating thing that Chrysler has done with with the Imperial series. And, the Imperial platform was actually created in 1957. And, this year, this 1966 was actually the final year of the Imperial platform, because they went to a different body style.
Yeah, they went to unibody, didn't they, in 67?
Yeah, very good. They went to a unibody after that. So, the Imperial brand, if you want to think about it that way, it was kind of like, a brand that was created, I guess a luxury brand that Chrysler created to compete with Lincoln and Cadillac. Now, they had them as early as 1926, but it was never a separate brand on itself. But when they did make it a separate brand, the Imperial brand, it was from 1955 to about 1975, and then it came back for a short time between 1981 and 1983. And the Imperial idea, I guess, was that they would take this basic platform that they had. They always had V8 engines, they always had automatic transmissions, and they were always the top of the line whatever. I mean, any kind of top of the line technology was included in the Imperial brand. Always a flagship vehicle, and what they did was they put new body styles on top of that platform every 2 to 3 years. So they were always changing what they looked like. The 1966, I guess it would be 1964 to 1966, or what the original Black Beauty look like.
Yeah, and that has a 440 cubic inch V8, 350 horsepower, about 480 pound-feet of torque in real life.
Yeah, so that's a strong car. That's a pretty big, it's a big engine, but it's a big car. It's, as we mentioned, it's 19 feet long. I think the length of this thing is 227.8 inches, so that's like 19 feet, just under 19. It's about 6 feet 8 inches across. That's a, you know, you don't think that's really that wide, but that's a wide vehicle. That's practically a full lane of traffic.
You know, for a car that's supposed to be inconspicuous and secretive, that's a heck of a big car. Oh, also, I forgot one of the strangest additions to the Black Beauty.
What's that?
Did you read about the brooms?
I did not.
Okay, so the Black Beauty has brooms that can descend behind the rear wheels.
Why is that?
Wait for it. To cover the tracks.
Oh, boy, really?
I promise you, that is a real thing.
Really? So if they're on a dirt road, they can cover the tracks of the vehicle by brushing the road, I guess,
I don't know,
the road surface.
Man.
Interesting.
It's a comic book. I don't know what you want me to tell you. But yeah, that is one of the things there. And whether it's efficacious, I don't know.
Okay. Wow. Nice word.
Thank you.
So listen, they also had, this was also the first year for the 440 engine, for the 1966 Imperial. So that was kind of a big deal. And that's why they chose, I would guess that's why they chose the 66. So it had enough pull to be able to pull all of this, instead of swapping out engines, you know, if it had a smaller engine prior to that, they probably wanted the 440, which is a big block, to be able to haul around all this extra weight that the Black Beauty was carrying, because I'm sure that that stuff, all that gadgetry, I just weighed it down quite a bit.
Even if it's just dummy gun, if they're just dummy guns.
Yeah, exactly.
Really,
so it's a big, powerful engine, you know, 440, 350 horsepower, as you mentioned, a lot of torque. But, you know, then that's something else. They, you know, I do want to talk about the current movie. The one that was shot in 2011 or released in 2011, but I think maybe there's something else that we need to include here, right?
Yes, and I am impressed by your excellent sense of timing. Scott, how could we talk about the newest incarnation of the Green Hornet? How could we talk about the film without first talking about Audible Podcast? Well, we are back to our... to the future. We're back to the future talking about the newest Black Beauty.
Yeah, and there was a remake of the Black Beauty, I guess. I don't even know if you can call it a remake, because they just brought it to film, I guess the film world, right? The big screen.
It's like a translation almost.
Going from the small screen to the big screen. And, you know, this one stars the same people, but it has the same characters. You know, it still has Britt Reed, still has Kato. And I think it's, who's starring in this one? I think it's Seth Rogen, right?
Yeah, and Jay Cho.
Mm-hmm. And I think Cameron Diaz is playing, what's her name? Lenore, is that right? Case, is that right?
Love interest?
Yeah. Well, she's the secretary, and really the only one outside of you know, the other two that know his real identity. They're only ones that know who the Green Hornet really is. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the secret angle. It kind of like, you know what, Ben, I'm going to make another Batman comparison. It's almost like Alfred. Alfred knows who Bruce Wayne really is, you know, that he's really Batman. So,
because everybody else is fooled by that, half of a mask.
That's right. Yeah, similar in this. You know, there's again half masks, and you know they're wearing suits, but big deal. You can't really tell who they are.
Right.
So okay, we're talking about the new film, the new car, and they decided that, you know, they thought, well, there's no way we're going to be able to get the original Black Beauty, of course, you know, because these are pristine cars that are museum pieces. And
one is in the Peterson.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, one's in the Peterson Museum, and the other one is part of some private collection. I think they mentioned, I want to say South Carolina, is that right? South Carolina, that's right. So in someone's private collection. By the way, that's the car I saw auctioned off when I was a kid.
The one that went to South Carolina?
I believe it is, unless it's the one that ended up at the Peterson Museum. I don't know, it's one of the two, but I saw it at an auction a long time ago. It made a big impression on me. These things, they thought there's no way we're going to get the original car to use in our film. So what are we going to have to do here? We're going to have to figure out a new version of Black Beauty, right? Well, I guess they decided that they were going to try to sell it by saying, no, we can find enough of these 1965, 1966, maybe 1964 Chrysler Imperial Crowns to create this or to do this film. But we're going to need something like 30 of these.
Right around 29 is what they ended up with.
29. Now, imagine the task of, you know, the car wrangler, the car coordinator, I guess. His name is Dennis McCarthy. He was charged with finding 29 1964 to 1966 Chrysler Imperial Crowns, four-door hardtop sedans to create this film. Now, some of them were going to be restored completely so that they were kind of like the heroes for the shots. You know, they were going to be the ones, the close-ups, the interiors. You know, they were going to be the beauty cars, I guess. And then the other, 26 of them or whatever, 25 of them were going to be just kind of the ones that were going to be doing all the stunt driving, all the stuff that was going to be, you know, where the damage may occur. But, you know, over a short period of time, a very short period of time, they did find enough of them to create or recreate Black Beauty.
Yes. And they did so with a lot of, I would say, a lot of behind the curtain acclaim. Because that is a tall order, you know?
That is. And they had to go to private collectors. They found a lot of them were just rust buckets. You know, they were just the shell of the car, pretty much. I think one of the stories is they found a guy that had lots of pieces for these things. And actually, he had full cars, but he wouldn't sell them any of the full cars. He would only sell them the pieces of the cars, which is frustrating. But I think the guy was probably saying, this is my retirement. I'm going to try to make money on this. So here's somebody that needs 29 of these cars, and I've got a lot of them. I'm going to sell you the pieces, and they're going to be worth a lot more than just the full cars are to you. So I'm going to sell them that way. That's probably his goal, if I had to guess, Ben.
I mean, that's understandable.
Understandable, I guess, but it was frustrating, I think, for the Wranglers, the car Wrangler.
Absolutely.
Car coordinator, I think. But again, 29 of these cars were needed for the film. 26 of them were actually wrecked for the production purposes. I mean, three of the cars survived, and they're in good shape. Some of them, again, some of them are heroes, some are close-ups. Some of them had no engines, so don't feel too bad about them. You know, they weren't complete cars.
Which, for anyone who doesn't know, that is fairly common in any kind of car-oriented film you're ever going to see.
I mean, look at the Dukes of Hazzard television series. Like, look at the right. Destruction of cars there. Now, people point to them as being, you know, one of the main reasons why there are so few on the market, because they went through so many cars. And I think they're saying the same thing about this, is that now there are 29 fewer of these cars, well, 26 fewer of these Chrysler Imperial Crown vehicles around.
Might as well go ahead and call it 29, man, because the average person is not going to be able to get a hold of those other three.
Yeah, but let me tell you something, though. Like, even the ones that weren't completely destroyed, I mean, they could be restored. They can be fixed. They can be sold by the production company. You know, if they're not too bad, because a lot of them were used in the final chase scene where, you know, many of these things were really beat up, I guess, in the final scene of the movie. I guess there was a lot of destruction in that scene. But the team fully rebuilt and restored what they guess is about 15 of those cars. So the other ones, like I said, some of them had no engines. Some were built just good enough for, you know, like the distance they were going to be seen from.
Right,
you know,
like a wide-angle car.
Yeah, I mean, that's a 100-foot car. You know, it looks good from 100 feet, but anything closer, and, you know, you start to see all the flaws and everything. And it's not, you know, maybe the interior is not all there. That type of restoration. So, you know, I don't know. Take this with a grain of salt, I guess, or, you know, that you know, they're probably still out there and still available.
Yeah, I have a little postscript if you want to end on here.
Sure.
Okay, so in 1992, a guy named Dan Goodman purchased the original number one Black Beauty from 20th Century Fox. Hmm. This is how it got to the Peterson. That's the story.
Interesting.
So he got it for $10,000 in 1992. Isn't that suspiciously low?
Can I tell you something?
What?
I wonder if this is that auction I went to. I mean, 92, I don't know. I mean, it seems like I went to it earlier than that, just prior to that, but $10,000, it wouldn't surprise me.
So he also, furthermore, he commissioned Dean Jeffries to restore number one.
Hmm.
And, you know, of course, we have the two cars built for the series. Number one's the primary car. It was in perfect mechanical condition, right? But it only had 17,000 miles on it, and it was badly weathered. So as soon as Jeffries begins restoring it, he and Goodman start fighting in court about how expensive it is and who has the rights to the Black Beauty name. Jeffries eventually restored the car, and he restored it to where it looks great. It has a lot of the same stuff, but it's not the same as it was in the TV show.
So the one in the Peterson Museum is just slightly off from the one that we saw on the television show.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough, I guess. I mean,
to get
all that stuff working again, I can imagine the cost involved in kind of fixing all that stuff. I mean, installing it's one thing, you know, brand new, able to work on stuff when it's pristine and new.
Sure.
But to restore it and then make it work again, that's often difficult and expensive.
Yeah, it's kind of, it all... All right, this is what it always reminds me of, and this is probably a bad comparison. So in Frankenstein, you know, when Dr. Frankenstein is putting the monster's body together.
Sure, yeah.
He's kind of doing the same thing that a lot of people have to do when they're building a car. He's looking for the parts that will work.
That's a reasonable comparison, I think.
It's a little bit creepy, but again, we are recording this in October.
True.
And we hope that you guys have enjoyed our podcast on Black Beauty. which to me was the show stealer of the Green Hornet.
Definitely.
Because the Green Hornet did not have superpowers.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think, I mean, a lot of people will look at the television series and see the Black Beauty as the star of the show, really.
Yeah, I want to see Kato and the Black Beauty. That's the show I want to see.
That'd be a good one.
I'm kidding. I've heard good things about the film, which I admit I haven't seen yet. I've only seen Black Beauty clips.
Likewise.
Okay. Well, if anybody in the office would be just watching a show for the cars, it would be us. You guys, let us know if you have a topic that you would like us to cover in the future. If you have become a lucky owner of a Chrysler Imperial, or, you know, just to shoot the breeze.
How about a Black Beauty lookalike? Because I know that a lot of people like to create or replicate what they see, like, you know, the Ecto-1 or yeah. Black Beauty, or, you know, cars like that, or the Back to the Future DeLorean time machine.
Oh, good call.
People love to make cars like this on their own in their own garage. So if you know of one out there that you see on the road occasionally, let us know about it, or send us a photo.
Yeah, we might blog about it and put it on our website, carstuffshow.com. We might make it a priority on our Facebook page, where you can also send us a post of anything that interests you. You can drop us a line on Twitter, and if you'd like to go a little more long form, you can send us an email directly. We are
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.